Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Hard times
like that. Hello and welcome to the show. We are on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. There's a lot to get into here on a Thursday, so let's not waste any time. Let's bring in Joe Favorito, who has been in sports and entertainment for over 35 years. Joe, you have a very extensive resume, my friend. Knicks, 76ers. I could go on and on, but you have an amazing website, joefavorito.com. You have a must-read newsletter. Before we get into all the craziness in the sports media landscape, how can the folks keep up with what you're doing?
Well, thanks, Arash, and we've been friends for a long time since we actually met for the first time. Like, I think it was in at an IFL event in Chicago, right, in the convention center in Rosemont.
Yep.
Easiest way, you know, I talk a lot about pop culture. I teach at Columbia. JoeFavorito.com is my website. You can sign up for my newsletter there, which comes out on Sundays, is a compendium of a lot of different things. And obviously Twitter follows or X follows at JoeFav. But yeah, hopefully this is going to be the first of a weekly segment where we can talk about everything sports, business, and pop culture and kind of go from there.
Sports media, sports business is in the news this week with the rights deal for the NBA. The big story that may be coming out of it is that Turner might be done. It looks like they're going to get squeezed out. And the big takeaway from that is the studio show, which has been long considered perhaps the best studio show in sports with Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith. Then Ernie Johnson, Shaquille O'Neal, that could be coming to a close. Here's my thing about that. That show doesn't have to end. It does seem like all the folks that are a part of that show perhaps would not go somewhere else. The other thing about it, I mean, Charles Barkley has hinted for years that, you know, he might be done. He doesn't want to do that show. Shaq obviously does not need to do the show. Your thoughts there? Again, I think this is a big deal in the sense that I think fans obviously love the show. But if they wanted to continue, they could. It does look like at some point in time, whether it's Charles looking to leave, like Kearney doesn't need to do this anymore. He doesn't look like he wants to move. Your thoughts on let's focus on the studio show component of this first. That next season could be the last of the show.
So first of all, I think when you look at that, from my perspective, it's great that NBC could potentially be getting back the NBA. I think they did a tremendous job as first movers to get it going. You know, it brings in other pieces that they have, obviously, with streaming on Peacock and Telemundo and other things that they can bring to the table. Marv Albert, who's been a mentor of mine for as long as I've been on this planet, always used to say, very few people watch for the announcers. They watch for the athletes and they watch for the content. So, and by the way, talent is made to be moved. So if there's a deal to be made and NBC or ESPN wants to suddenly bring on some of that talent, they can absolutely do that because there's no place for them to stay. I mean, I look at more as like, what happens to somebody like Mike Breen, you know, yeah, or Doris Burke, you know, where do they go? Or JJ Redick, if he's not coaching the Lakers.
That's right.
Where do they go? Because I still think people are watching for the games. And although we get focused on the Stephen A. Smith personalities, those are few and far between.
Yeah.
And the camaraderie around a show moves from time to time. And frankly, I would bet you could go back a year and as great a job as those guys have done and will continue to do. And some of them are colleagues of mine. It's come and gone at that point, Arash. It's really all about what's going on the court. And then don't downplay, the new networks are going to build tremendous content pieces around whatever they do. And people say, oh, I used to love, you know, the NBA on TNT. great. I also used to love Real Sports, and that show is gone now. Yeah. So, you know, I used to love This Week in Baseball. You can't watch that anymore. You know, so it's really, I think we got to stop focusing on the minutia of the other side, even though it's really important and people have put time into it. It's really about the talent on the court and where that goes, because that's what people are watching for the long term. And that's what they're paying for, by the way. They're not paying for studio shows.
Well, one of the big takeaways is that it's pretty clear that the NBA doesn't want to be in business with Warner Brothers Discovery, WBD. By the way, like I think most people don't want to be in business with a company that's $40 billion in debt. So it looks like they historically would be the league that would find a way. Like, listen, we've been with Turner for years. By the way, Joe, I totally forgot how long the NBA has been on Turner. TNT, you go back to like the 1980s, right?
Right, but they were on NBC for a tremendous amount of years before that. So these are legacy deals that move from place to place. And I think, you know, if you're a league run by multi-billionaires with Adam Silver negotiating team of owners at the top, including Ted Leonsis, you look at it and say, where can we get the best deal for the most exposure? Yeah. And how do we now split that pie up in as many ways as we can so that we can take various pieces? Because it's all about revenue. You have to keep finding new revenue to bring it in. And can't take anything away from the NFL. The NBA is amazing. Major League Baseball has built out a package. We know what the NWSL has done at a lesser level for money, but the NWSL really set the market in terms of how you can split up a broadcast partnership, and that's going to be emulated going forward. And I think the way the NBA is going to win out on this is you'll have to figure out where you're watching, and there's going to be platforms or devices or things you'll get on your phone to say this game is on that night, and appointment television will be found. So I don't think it's a WBD, you know, we don't want to be in market with them anymore. It's like, where are we going to get the most money out of this? And then, by the way, how are we also going to grow this in streaming, and how are we going to grow it globally? Those are the two things you have to figure out if you're the NBA.
No doubt about that. Joe, we recently had the 17th annual Sports Business Awards. They were in New York. Wanted to hit on some of the awards that I think would be of note for us and some of the folks out there. Despite the fact that this game was not played in Southern California, Las Vegas, Hawaii, the Pop-Tarts Bowl was amazing. That is the brand activation of the year, really showcasing, like, listen, obviously this is not the Rose Bowl, but let's have fun with this. If you guys didn't watch, look it up on YouTube. I mean, you had a Pop-Tarts mascot basically coming out of a toaster. Players got to eat this big Pop-Tarts thing. I think there's value there. And then now you got like what Snoop Dogg and Gin and Juice will be taking over the Arizona.
And you had the Duke's Mayo Bowl, which really set the mark for dumping mayonnaise on people, if you want to see that. So, if you're a second-tier bowl or one that is not in the BCS championship that particular year, you have to figure out a way to cut through the clutter. And these partnerships are the ways to do it. Scooter's Coffee has done a tremendous job with the bowl that they have in Frisco. So you have to figure out those things and how you tie them out. But going back to the Sports Business Awards, which were Wednesday night in New York, Arash, some things to note. One is Jessica Berman, congratulations, the first woman ever selected as a sports executive of the year. In 17 years, had never had a woman before. And also coming from a women's league, which had never been recognized on that level before, following up on Angel City FC winning the club of the year or the team of the year last year, which was the first time a women's league had won that. Another piece worth noting is the PWHL, although not in Southern California, owned by obviously the owners of the Dodgers, and put together under Stan Kasten, who was there last night to accept the award, won it, you know, breakthrough league of the year. So women's sports really focused. The other thing that was really focused was soccer. I don't necessarily agree with Inter Miami being the team of the year. I mean, you go out and you spend a ridiculous amount of money on, you know, the best player in the world suddenly become the team of the year. Maybe not, you know, but Arthur Blank and all the stuff that he's done, not only with the Falcons, but with Atlanta United, and figuring out how they've been part of it. You know, MLS, you know, was involved very highly. And then obviously the NWSL. Those are the takeaways last night, is the rise of soccer again in this country, which is going to continue to grow. And also the power that sports played by women are continuing to bring. And hopefully, Arash, someday soon we're going to talk about just sports, not men's sports or women's sports. That's a goal for 2024 and beyond.
Exactly. And, you know, the power of the has in our marketplace in particular. And I've told people this, if you have not gone to a game, you need to go to a game. 20,000 fans there. What is the key to success, do you think? Again, whenever a new league starts up, and obviously we wanted to do well, there's a secret sauce in play there. What do you think are the keys to having a successful new league?
Well, the first is tremendous amounts of money to burn.
Exactly.
So that's the first one, because you're going to lose money for years, and you have to have owners who are dedicated to it and are not going to look at the ledger sheet every 30 seconds. Second is understanding the marketplace and understanding the culture and how you build culture locally, and then you kind of bring that out. The third, which the NWSL did this year, is you have to have live broadcast distribution and people who believe in it, and that takes time and data to build up. The NWSL did not get the deal that they had this year because suddenly people like women's soccer. They were able to provide a compelling narrative, compelling storytelling, and compelling data to show that advertisers are going to spend money against it. And one of the other brands that won last night was Ally. And Ally went into this 2 years ago as an online bank, or 3 years ago as an online bank, and said, we are going to put our money where our mouth is. We're going to spend half our money eventually on men's sports, half on women's sports, and we're going to drive other brands to do the same thing. Because at the end of the day, if you don't have the distribution, if you don't have the data, and if you don't have the brand spending money against you, you cannot succeed.
When I look at success, again, just as a casual observer, you kind of look at, you know, what's the TV viewership? What does the crowd look like? This is a big weekend here in Los Angeles and Las Vegas. Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever are coming to town. Joe, Crypto.com Arena is almost sold out. I talked to someone with the Sparks. They expect it to be close to a sellout. You go to the secondary ticket market, you cannot find a lower bowl ticket for less than $100. That game will do over 2 million, perhaps, viewership. We're talking real tangible things right now. 20,000 sold out crowd, 2 million viewership. How does that change the business model for this league moving into the future?
Well, it doesn't yet. And the what you need is consistency. And it's tremendous to have that for a team that hasn't won a game yet in the Fever. And the phenomenon that Caitlin Clark is. But as you know, Arash, there are tremendously successful other athletes in the WNBA, which now hopefully can ride that tide and become more and more household names across the country, not just with the Sparks, not just with the Fever, not just with the Liberty, not just with the Seattle Storm, but you have to be able to storytell and bring other people out, because it's nice to come once. You hope that they come in, they're collecting their data, they know who they are, and by the way, they come back five or six different times because they really enjoyed the product, not just of seeing the Indiana Fever and the Sparks, but I want to follow the Sparks in and away. It's funny, I was walking through Times Square last night and I saw something and I didn't get a chance to take a picture of it that I'd never seen. There were two young boys, probably 12 or 13, walking through Times Square with Caitlin Clark t-shirts on.
Wow.
And the Fever were not in town. They were Iowa t-shirts. But that shows where you're crossing over, and how Caitlin Clark crosses over into the mainstream is great, but you need the consistent power of other athletes, other storytelling, other media that will continue to drive it, because like you saw with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson in 1979, that led to a deluge of growth for the NBA. And I think the same thing can happen for the WNBA. They've done a really good job of storytelling. Now it's got to get great.
So much has been made about their contracts and how much that they make. And there was a big story, and I think the league is still currently investigating the LVCVA's $100,000 per player. Now, I think the problem that the league had, or teams may have had, was the way that they made it seem like. I mean, it looked like they didn't have to do anything as long as you just play basketball and you got like $100,000, which, again, that is a bargain for like, you know, a Kelsey Plum type of a player. But, you know, the 12th player, they will sign them all to contracts. There will be deliverables, the number of appearances and social media posts and things like that. But obviously, listen, teams around the league are a little concerned that like there's going to be a line out the door of players trying to go to Las Vegas. Your general thoughts on that whole process?
Yep. So none of this is socialism. It is a meritocracy. You do well, you draw, we hit our numbers, you get more money. That's the way it works. unfortunately, there's a lot of people, not just in women's sports, but in niche sports in general, to kind of come up with it and say, you know, this is what we want to do and we need to drive more money. You know, we should be paid because we're great athletes. Well, it's a very competitive marketplace right now. And when we get away from women's sports versus men's sports and talk about sports, brands are looking for a dollar to dollar, apples to apples comparison over time. And you have to deliver. Now, there's lots of data that shows that the demo for women's sports or a demo for the UFC reaches a certain group that you want to reach if you're spending. You need mainstream coverage. And I think the WNBA and the NWSL are going to get there. I think it's just going to take time. And if you look back, go through history. 25 years into the NFL and Major League Baseball and every other mature sport, let's call the four sports, let's say five with MLS. You know, they were not hitting the numbers that the NWSL or the WNBA are hitting today.
Yeah.
If you went back and looked at the media deal 10 years into the NFL, you know, which was in the 30s, or 10 years into the NBA in the 50s and the 60s, they didn't get the revenue or drive the interest that the NWSL and the WNBA are driving today, given their history. So everybody's just got to kind of relax a little bit and let the market play in. But when the dollars are there and you can show that that's what's going to drive interest, and, you know, the Davis family now with the Aces in Las Vegas are trying to push the needle a little bit, that's okay. You know, that's what Al Davis did with the Oakland Raiders. So it just takes some time to get there, and we will get there. The numbers are going up. They're not going down. So as long as they can keep going up and the revenue is there to support it, because the revenue has to be there to support it, then you will have successful leagues. But it's just going to take some time. The data for women's sports is still, I've heard experts say, 2 years away before we get there to show that it's sustained over time across many markets. It just takes time to get there, and it will get there. Everybody's got to enjoy the moment. Go see Caitlin Clark when she's in Los Angeles. Go see the Aces in Las Vegas. Watch some great sports streaming in Hawaii, and continue to support them with your dollars. If you don't support them with your dollars, this is a meritocracy. It's not going to work. It's not socialism.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. The facility of the year, not surprising, SoFi Stadium. Again, us here in Los Angeles have been very lucky. All these big events that for years, you know, obviously wouldn't go to the outdated Coliseum and the Rose Bowl, they are coming back. Joe, after the Paris Olympics are done, the countdown does begin. Los Angeles is getting the Olympics in 2028. Prior to that, it will be one of the main destinations for the 2026 World Cup. The Intuit Dome is about to open. By the way, it looks amazing. $2 billion arena, home of the Clippers, right across the street, essentially, from SoFi. We are in a very fun time period. In not only Los Angeles, but Vegas. You know, when I talked before we started the Tribune, I said, you know, there's 270 miles that connects Los Angeles to Vegas. This will be the center of the sports world. Your thoughts on what's happening here? Again, the amount of dollars, again, the Tropicana is being torn down. Whether or not the Oakland A's are going to build a stadium there, we'll see. That no city still, Joe, gives more public dollars. It doesn't go to a vote, and that's a separate issue that we can talk about next week. But the amount of dollars being spent on sports facilities in this region is incredible. Just touch on, like, World Cup's coming here. The Olympics, well, it's a unique time.
The beauty of it is that there's world-class facilities that have been there or renovated for years, because Los Angeles has had the Olympics before. So they understand how to do it. Now, how you drive more revenue to it, that's a different story. You know, we're going to see how that goes. Vegas is interesting, obviously, because the mayor does not control the purse strings. Clark County controls the purse strings, which is really unusual for most cities. And it all goes back to the concept was proved by the Las Vegas Golden Knights. And sometimes, again, that gets lost to very short history, but the Golden Knights proved that this could actually happen. And now it's continued to grow, and the NFL model is a little bit different because you have, you know, visiting teams coming in with their fan bases. You know, the WNBA has proved that you could draw a sustained audience. I think the Desert Dogs, the NLL team, have done pretty well. They're going to move now to the other arena.
In Henderson, that's right.
In Henderson. And then, you know, will an NBA team be there? Well, guess what's going to trigger that? The media deal.
100%.
So the media deal will show us whether we end up back with the new Seattle Supersonics and a team in LA, or we end up with a team in Nashville, or we end up with another team in Kansas City. Everyone says it's going to be Las Vegas. We'll see if it's going to be Las Vegas. I do believe that there'll be a team in Seattle, but everyone's waiting for NBA expansion. Here it comes once the media deals are signed. That's going to be the next natural step. And you know what? If the market supports 15 teams across, you know, Las Vegas and Southern California, tremendous. As long as the fans turn out and it's a good business model, they'll stay. We've seen failures in markets for years where people thought they were going to succeed. But I think committed ownership, who's putting the infrastructure in, has the right media deals, understands the market, is part of the social fabric of the community, like LAFC and like Angel City have done, that's what you want, and that's how you succeed.
Exactly. And really, this is the time period that Adam Silver set forth. Once we get the media rights deal in place, which will happen this month, next month, at some point here, then expansion talk will begin. And I've said this, it has been very fascinating how specific LeBron James has been. I don't want to be a part of an expansion team. I don't want a team. I want the Las Vegas franchise. And the league obviously very much has enjoyed their time in Vegas. They got the in-season tournament there. The summer league was there. But Joe, this flew by because there's so much sports media, so much sports business. So we will do this each and every Thursday. And listen, this has been fantastic. Joe, we'll have you back on next week. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll be joined by Grant Mona to talk about the Dodgers and Shohei Ohtani. When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Still climb with the underground
when we come around. Welcome back to the show, presented by the Sporting Tribune. We are back on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment, or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, let's welcome in from the Sporting Tribune my main man, Grant Money Mona. Grant, two straight losses for the Dodgers. Again, I'm not really concerned, but probably a good time for them to take the day off, reset, hit the road. They are going to be playing against the Cincinnati Reds, who they just saw at Dodger Stadium. What have you seen, or is there like anything concerning over back-to-back losses?
Yeah, you know what? I think with these back-to-back losses, what's really faltered is their pitching, Arash. And, you know, after such a great, you know, kind of stretch of pitching, especially their bullpen, it was really kind of turning a corner and becoming a bullpen that we all thought that could happen in the second half. That's usually when Dodger bullpens kind of get it together. They've had a great first half, and the starting rotation has been excellent as well. But over the past couple outings, I mean, Gavin Stone had a little bit of a bad outing and gave up three runs in his start. And then Tyler Glasnow last night, I mean, he didn't look quite near the guy that we think that he can be. And over the last few starts, Tyler Glasnow has really not pitched up to that ace type label that we give him. And, you know, again, it was a concern for me coming from Tampa because I watched him a lot in Tampa. And what the concern was the command. And I've seen him be wild at times, and I've seen him be dominant at times. And my concern when he came to the Dodgers was that, hey, this guy's command, like if he leaves the ball over the plate, I know he has power stuff and like Cy Young type stuff. But if he leaves the ball over the plate, like these National League hitters are going to take advantage of it. And, you know, for whatever reason, he hasn't really been able to key in the command as of late. And I thought with the Dodgers pitching lab, as they call it, and with Mark Pryor at the helm, I thought they could maybe fix that coming from Tampa. But it seems like some of the same issues that are starting to pop up. And look, the Arizona Diamondbacks, they kind of have the Dodgers number here as of late. I mean, if we remember in the postseason, I mean, they beat the Dodgers fair and square. They swept the Dodgers in the NLDS. And it looks like, you know, after that series in Arizona where the Dodgers won that series, they came out with a vengeance in this series, Arash. And look, Christian Walker has been labeled as a Dodger killer, and he did it again. He hit another home run. Ketel Marte hit another home run. They absolutely shut out the Dodgers. And the pitching staff for the Diamondbacks, I got to give them a lot of credit. They shut down that very potent lineup. And the Dodgers offense, look, I know that they were also on a hot streak, and over the last couple games, they just haven't done it with runners in scoring position. While Shohei Ohtani did get two hits a few nights ago, he was quiet. Like, everyone was quiet 1 through 9. And a little bit of a concern, I wanted to mention this, is Andy Páez. So Andy Páez was one of the guys that I really wanted to come up, and because he had an amazing spring and he was doing so, so well in AAA. And with the flux of James Outman, and, you know, I don't know what's going on with Chris Taylor. He's still hitting under 100. I really wanted Andy Páez to be called up, and they, you know, rightfully so, they did. And he had an amazing start. It looked like he was going to be the next star for the Dodgers, the next guy they bring up in like a phenom. And over the past week, 2 weeks, I mean, he has really struggled. His average is near 240 now. He was up around 310 at one point. And I don't know what it is with young Dodger outfielders, because James Outman, there's a reason he was sent down too. They go through these really long lulls and these stretches where it just looks like they're lost at the plate. And I don't know what it is with him and James Outman, but it's a little bit of a concern, because he was kind of brought up to fortify that bottom of the lineup. And I know Jason Hayward came back. He hasn't looked the same either. He had a home run in one of his first few games. But other than that, that bottom of the lineup is a huge concern. I know it's barely late May, like, we have so much season left, but if I'm the Dodgers and this continues to happen, Arash, I've talked with a lot of people, a lot of Dodger fans about this, they may have to look to make a move to kind of fortify that bottom of the lineup, and they have plenty of assets to do it. There's going to be guys on the market. I'm looking at a guy like Tommy Pham from the Chicago White Sox. Yeah. He's hitting over 320. He was a guy that was signed late. The White Sox aren't competing. He's probably going to be a prime trade candidate. So if you can get like another, like maybe one more bat to kind of round out that lineup, because right now it's too top heavy and teams are kind of exposing it. So while it's not a concern, look, the Dodgers are far and away ahead in the NL West, but you can't get complacent. And I think you got to still look at things to upgrade right now, especially now that, you know, like, look, the Diamondbacks may have a record around 500, but if they match up with the Dodgers, yeah, I would still be afraid of them. So a little bit of a concern, but look, they're going into a long road trip, Arash, and I think that this road trip, if they can have a great road trip, it can maybe give them a lot of confidence going forward.
What's the timeline? Again, like you said, we're kind of hitting late May, so we're not even in June yet. I mean, when you talk about making trades, when you talk about making moves, what time of year do you normally look at making a move in? Again, because what you don't want to have happen is like someone's going through a slump and you do something drastic. What time period are you thinking, like June, July? What time frame would you look for the Dodgers to make some kind of a move?
Yeah, usually, you know, teams start to ramp up around July, but, you know, there are teams that have made trades in June, late June. I don't expect anybody to make any blockbuster trades before the middle of July, because we got to remember the trade deadline is July 31st or around that. I think they changed it a few times. Sometimes it's August 1st. So it's late July is when the trade deadline is. Obviously, that deadline day is where a lot of the deals happen. But there have been moves made before then that kind of changed the way we look at, like, last year, before the trade deadline, there are a few moves that were made from contenders. And last year's trade deadline wasn't really that big of a deal. I feel like this year's trade deadline, there's going to be a group of teams, Arash, that are around 500, that are almost in contention, but they can go on a run and be in contention, much like the San Diego Padres. You know, there's teams like the Braves that are not performing up to what I think that they could be. So there's a handful of teams that will look to be buyers at the deadline. Now, I don't know how many sellers there will be, but if I'm the Dodgers, I got to seriously look at doing it. I mean, maybe sooner rather than later, because we now have a 2-month kind of stretch of that bottom of the lineup really not producing. So either you bring someone up because the Dodgers have a treasure trove of prospects, or you go into the trade deadline and say, look, we can get something done a month before it happens, and maybe with a better value, we can do that.
Want to get your thoughts. Caitlin Clark is coming to Los Angeles and Las Vegas, so two of the markets, obviously, that we cover and are in. Ticket prices, I don't know if you saw this, Grant. The game is almost sold out. Nothing in the lower bowl for less than $90 now. Again, I want to see this play out. Again, I think it's sort of like people want to see Caitlin Clark's first game in Los Angeles or her first game in Las Vegas. So before I kind of jump to conclusions in terms of this being a new trend in the league, let's see how it plays out. Again, you know, for years, I've thought that the Sparks are the best value in sports. I mean, you can get a suite, you know, a ticket inside of a suite for $5. It's like an amazing deal. So obviously that won't be the case on Friday night. Your thoughts on the WNBA, but also the popularity that Caitlin Clark has brought to the league?
Yeah, I think the WNBA is booming. I mean, I'm seeing so much WNBA content on all of my social timelines, and it's so fun. Like, it's good to be finally integrated into WNBA, where it's like there's high trends. Like, if you go on social media, the trends at the top of during some of these games. I mean, I was watching the Liberty and the Fever on Sunday. I think it was Sunday morning. And it was like, that was the main thing everyone was watching. They wanted to see Caitlin Clark in Brooklyn playing the Liberty. So it's really cool. I mean, it's not just Caitlin Clark though. Like, we have so many young women that are playing so fantastic right now. I remember you were talking to Willie Ramirez about Katie Martin for the Aces, and she's really come on too. That Aces team is so stacked. So it's actually good to see that the Sparks held up with the Aces, because if the Sparks can compete with the champs, like, they can compete with anybody. And Cameron Brink has made such an immediate impact to that team. A lot of people are comparing her to Anthony Davis for the Lakers just because of how dominant she is on defense. So look, while her points per game are not there and she's not scoring a lot, De'Erica Hamby has been crazy this year. They have a really good scrappy team. And I know that the record probably doesn't reflect what you'd want to see from them, but it's so early that Arash, I think that the Sparks team, the future is bright for them. And you know, when you get under the bright lights in LA and when you have Caitlin Clark here, especially when you move it to a bigger arena to supplement that crowd, Arash, like you mentioned, and it's going to be sold out. It's going to be so fun to see Caitlin Clark in Los Angeles. And look, after a couple of bad games to open up her career, Caitlin Clark is really, I know that they're 0-4, 0-5. I understand that. But she's really rounded into form in terms of her play. She had an ankle injury late in I think it was against the Liberty. And she came back and she actually played the rest of that game. I know that they're not translating to wins, but she is shooting the lights out of the ball. There was a shot, I remember there was a clip on social media that went viral, where she pulled up for almost a logo three, Arash, and it was late in the fourth quarter. And in Indiana, look, the Pacers are still playing right now. Yeah. They are playing in the postseason. And she had that home crowd in Indiana. It looked like an NBA playoff game. And it was one of the first games of the season for the WNBA. That just goes to show, like, the trajectory of this league, but her impact as well, because she's starting to kind of cook with her shooting, with her playmaking, and she's starting to look like the Iowa Caitlin Clark that we all know. So I'm excited for her future, not just down the road, but like this year. I want to see how she progresses as well.
We're going to start focusing on sort of the offseason, obviously, with the Lakers and the Clippers. With the Lakers, it's still, you know, looking for a head coach. There's been reports that they could be zeroing in on J.J. Redick. What exactly that means, I don't know. By the way, the Cavs will be looking for a head coach as well. Kind of a surprising move there on Thursday. But wanted to get your thoughts on Paul George. Again, you know, whenever we hear reports about certain teams planning to make certain moves, and if it's reported by Shams or Woj, like, I really truly believe that they're hearing that from those specific teams. It does look like the Sixers may give Paul George a max offer now, you know, because he's with the Clippers. The Clippers can match that, There's been a lot of questions about if they would or what they would be willing to give Paul George. The one thing that we can perhaps confirm is that they will not give him a max contract. And sometimes that affects a player like a certain way where they will almost take slightly less to prove that team made a mistake. So let's play this out. I mean, what do you hope? I think most Clipper fans don't want to see them run it back. But like, if you don't have Paul George, what's plan B?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of Clipper fans that just do not want Paul George back, Arash. And, you know, it's kind of sad, honestly, because he's the one that carried the Clippers to their first Western Conference Finals appearance. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's a lot of high hopes coming into this year. And it's just the rhetoric that he mentioned before the season. I mean, he said that he was going to be on his bully, you know what? And, you know, when you put up a performance like he did in the playoffs where you don't perform like a 1A, 1B type player, I mean, obviously it's going to leave a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouths. You know, for the majority of that series, I could honestly say James Harden was the guy that was better than him. And I would honestly be more comfortable giving James Harden that money just because he can impact the game in more than just scoring. He's a great playmaker. He knows how to command an offense. He obviously can still score with the best of them, but he can get into the paint more. He's healthier. So for Paul George, he's in a tough spot because, you know, a lot of Clipper fans that I'm seeing have this notion, Arash, that it's just going to be so easy to sign and trade Paul George. Like, everyone just thinks, oh, why don't we just sign and trade him? First of all, he's going to have to accept that player option to do so. And number two, which is the biggest point that nobody's talking about, no Clipper fans are talking about, is that the team that does trade for him will be handicapped to the max. I mean, his option is for $50 million. So you're going to have to take on that contract, probably not be able to sign anybody else, probably not be able to get under the second apron to sign any good players. So it handicaps the team that is trading for him. Not to mention that team is going to have to trade the Clippers real assets. You know, the Clippers aren't just going to get nobodies. They're going to have to get real assets back. So that sign and trade thing, I think, is out the window. I don't think that'll happen. If he does leave, it'll just be straight up like, hey, I'm out. I'm going to Philly. I'm going to Indiana. I'm going to Orlando. They all have max spots, but I think Indiana is going to sign Pascal Siakam back. So essentially, it's either Philly or Orlando. And while both great teams, does he really want to leave Los Angeles? That's the biggest thing. That is the thing that Lawrence Frank and co have on him. Yeah. Do you want to leave your family here in Los Angeles and the beautiful weather and everything? Sure, go get $10 million more, but like, you can take $10 million less, be under, slightly under the max, and stay in Los Angeles. So it's a tough spot. And honestly, it's all on PG. Like, it's all on what he wants to do because he kind of has the leverage. He has the player option and he has the ability to be like, hey, deuces, like we did it. We tried it. You know, me and Kawhi, we tried to do this thing and it didn't work. So it's honestly on him. But if I'm Lawrence Frank and co, I'm actually very happy with them with, you know, kind of playing hardball here. They don't have to offer him the max. And honestly, Arash, I don't think he deserves a max, especially after he didn't make an all-NBA team. He didn't make an all-defensive team. He barely made the all-star team, and you could question that. Okay. And he didn't show up in the playoffs. So there's a lot of factors.
When you go down the list, like, it totally makes sense. You know, like who gets a max contract? You have to be a all-NBA player. And just because he was a couple of years ago, that doesn't take, that doesn't project into the future. And as you put together a team that, again, what's the reason for spending how much they're spending is to put a championship product on the court. And that was the biggest thing. And you just touched on the number one reason he will not get a max contract from the Clippers is that he was a disappearing actor in the playoffs. Like, the unfortunate thing is that they've hitched their wagon to Kawhi, and that's just that. There's nothing that they could do about it at this point. But, you know, Kawhi's missed the postseason for four consecutive years. Incredible if you just think about that for a second. But that's why you have Paul George, and that's why you have James Harden, and that's why you have Russell Westbrook, and that's why you have one of the biggest payrolls in the league, is that you're paying four guys expecting at least two or three of them to show up, certainly Paul George. My guess, though, is that Paul George is going to go with the team that pays him the most. Again, most guys generally do. Real quick, though, or just want to close out on this. I mean, I think a lot of Clippers fans, again, Clippers fans want this team to succeed, obviously. They want them to win a championship. They at least want them to get back to the conference finals. And obviously, they would love it to be with Paul George, but they are so out on him. Was there, I think I've been feeling this trend post 2021. Again, Paul George gets hurt in 2022, gets hurt again in 23. And then this past season, he just wasn't the same player. Talk about the relationship that Clipper fans have with Paul George, where I think if they were to give a big contract, I don't know how many Clipper fans would be happy about that.
Yeah, you're right. And especially after, like you mentioned, 2021, even last year, like there was a lot of great talk about Paul George amongst Clipper fans and like how they feel about him, how they feel about him as a player. Like there was times where I thought he was the face of the franchise over Kawhi Leonard just because of what he did in that 2021 run. And, you know, even in 22, he came back from his elbow injury and he, you know, he led the Clippers to the play-in and unfortunately got COVID in that play-in, but he was still there. He was available when he had the chance to be. And, you know, that went over really well with Clipper fans. But over the past year and a half, year, 2 years, the rhetoric has really changed. And look, if you bring back Paul George, fans will embrace him just because he still can be an all-star caliber player. He still can be a pretty good regular season guy. He's still from SoCal, so a lot of people really like that. And people will cheer for that. But I just feel like it's not just Paul George, Arash. It's this whole era. I think fans are just over this era. They're just over the injuries and the constant disappointments and the year after year, it feels like the same thing. It feels like we're just living in the twilight zone. Like year after year, you go through the same thing where, hey, oh, we have a championship team on paper. Yeah. And then it never pans out. So I don't think it's just Paul George. Obviously he takes a brunt of the heat just because of what he did in the playoffs this year. But I just feel like fans are out on this era. They want something fresh. They want something new. They want something energetic. Look at the teams that are in it now. A bunch of young, fresh, energetic, healthy players. So it's not just Paul George, although he is a part of it. It's just this whole era and core. Like, look, it's year five and they haven't even gotten to a finals, Arash. Like, I know it's sad, but it is what it is. You know, sometimes these front offices and these teams, like you go for it. And I agree with what the Clippers were trying to do. They went for it. They went all in, pushed their chips to the center of the table and went in, and it just didn't pan out. Sometimes you fail and you just got to move on from it. And going into a new arena, it seems like the right move, but I feel like we will be seeing the same team again.
It's such a great point because I totally agreed with the move that they made at the time. And to be honest, we could not have foreseen Kawhi constantly being hurt. If Kawhi is healthy in 2021, they make the finals, and I think that they win the whole thing. But sometimes things don't work out the way that you thought that they would. Grant, you're the best. We'll have you back on tomorrow. That is all the time we have for today. Let's do this again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe, stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.